Today we're finishing up this series, this Fixer Upper series that we've been in. I hope it's blessed you as much as it has me. I think it's fitting we're wrapping the series this week, as it happens that Elijah will be wrapping up his time in the hospital. Has a nice gift-wrapped feel to it, I think. If you missed any of the series, I invite you to go back and listen to any of the weeks you missed on our website. In this series, this Firm Foundation series, we talked about firm foundation. We talked about reconciling. Well, we talked about like investing in your kids. We talked about investing in each other. We talked about parenting. We talked about lots of different things in this series. Today, this message applies to every one of us. Today, we're discussing reconciliation. Listen, anytime we are in any kind of relationship with somebody, marriage, parental, friendship, coworker, there will be some point of friction. That's just the way it is. That's the way this thing works, this thing called life. Heather and I have a pretty good marriage. And I would say we barely ever fight or argue, but even then there is friction sometimes. This last week, we were talking on the phone, and I was saying something to her that she did not get the way that I had wanted her to get, and she was hopping mad. Of course, I didn't realize I had done anything wrong, and so I called the next day. I'm like, hey, what's going on? And she's like, we need to talk. I'm like, oh no. Luckily, what she heard isn't what I said, and it was okay, and we made up and we're friends, so that's good. But it happens. I remember when I was a young 10 or 11, I was already a pretty strapping lad, and my little sister, a couple, 3 years younger than me, 8, 9, however old she was, she was really mad at me, just really mad, and I was just annoying her because that's what I can do. And I remember, I'm a big kid, she's little as can be. We were sitting in a love seat together. I remember her turning to face me, and she got her feet up and just started kicking the crud out of me, right? Like, I mean, just like bicycle kicks, and she just, I kept scooting over and scooting over and scooting over, and she's just peppering me with these kicks, and I fell on the floor, and I remember going, that girl is scary, and she is. To this day, my sister scares me, and the deal is, when friction happens, and it will, we have to get one another to go and seek reconciliation. It's a must. It's a command. It's the right thing to do. It's the godly thing to do. So how do you deal with relational friction? Today we are going to look at the story of one of the major characters of the Old Testament. Look at the jerk move that he did and how we see him reconcile with his brother. If you want to turn to Genesis, you can. We're going to be in 32 and 33. The background of this is that Abraham and Sarah were promised a kid, right? Kid didn't happen for a long, long time, right? And then when they're about 100 years old, they have a kid named Isaac. Isaac met a wife, Rebecca. And Rebecca then had Esau and Jacob. So are you guys with me here? So here's the timeline, the genealogy. Rebecca had a little trouble with loving one son more than the other. So even though the older brother should have gotten his father's blessing and inheritance, she and Jacob, the younger brother, the one that she loved more, schemed to get both of them for Jacob, not the older brother Esau. And it happens. You guys probably know the bowl of soup thing, right? The blessing was stolen because Esau is hungry from hunting, and Jacob's like, I have this bowl of soup. He's like, well, can I have some? He's like, if you give me your blessing. And I don't know that Esau just thought he's just kidding or what, but he's like, you can have it. Just give me the soup. Really? I mean, I love chili, but that better be one dang good bowl of chili, right? To give away my blessing, my inheritance. And then we see Jacob going to his father, who is pretty much blind at this point, an old man, and he's like, I want your blessing, I want the inheritance. I want everything that is coming to me. And so rightfully he's like, no, this goes to Esau. And so he goes, well, let's figure out a way. Let's scheme. Let's figure out a way to trick my dad. So him and his mom, they start figuring out, like, well, we can take, my brother is a hairy man, so we'll put some hair on. And with animal hair. And when he says, hey, let me touch you, you know, you can feel it and be like, oh, okay, yeah, you're him. And so they tricked him and they deceived him. And then finally, he gets everything that should have gone to the older brother. So what happens? Jacob runs away. He runs away to a faraway land and tries to make a life for himself, while Esau does the same in their homeland. And many years later, after God has blessed both of the sons very much, Genesis 31, God tells Jacob to go back to his homeland, back to Esau. Genesis 31:3. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your father and grandfather and to your relatives there, and I will be with you. So it is that story, which takes place in chapters 32 and 33, that we will be looking at. We will be looking at reconciliation this morning, and I won't be reading the whole thing. That would take way too long. But I encourage you to go back this week and to read Genesis 31 through 33. It's a great story about God and his desire for forgiveness and reconciliation. But let me briefly give you the Cliff Notes version of what happens. Jacob had been working for a man named Laban. He did this because he fell madly in love with Laban's daughter, Rachel. Now, it's a bit ironic that Jacob, named and known for his trickster ways, has been tricked by Laban several times. He worked for his daughter's hand, Rachel, for 7 years. And at their wedding, Laban switched the brides. And he's like, wait, no, this wasn't what we agreed on. He's like, no, the older sister has to get married first. If you want to marry the younger sister, you got to work for me for another 7 years. So he does that. He loves Rachel. And so for 14 years, he works for this man Laban to get his daughter, the one he wants, Rachel. And so then he keeps going on, and he's trying to get land, he's trying to get livestock, he's trying to get just all these things that Laban has, and every time for 6 or 7 years while this is going on, Laban changes what happens, changes the terms, tricks him over and over again. But the thing is, what's crazy is that God, despite all this, and you can read all this, despite all this, God still blesses the socks off of Jacob. And so Jacob then, after Genesis 31:3, starts to head home. Jacob sees angels when he starts to head home. He sees a couple angels, and they talk to him and they encourage him and they tell him what he needs to hear. And then, just to test the waters, Jacob sends word to his brother Esau, like, is there hard feelings? Are we going to be okay? And the word comes back that Esau is on his way to see him with 400 soldiers. And that made Jacob a little nervous, a little scared. So Jacob begs God to rescue him. Jacob wrestles with God. Jacob goes, well, he wrestles with God. No, literally, he wrestles with God. Not like, oh, it's late night and I'm wrestling with my feelings about God. No, Jacob actually wrestles with God. Jacob finds this man who was an angel, and they wrestle till daybreak, and they're wrestling. And then this man, this God, or either God or an angel, he touches the hip socket of Jacob, and the hip goes out of joint, and for the rest of his life, Jacob has a limp. Jacob goes to meet Esau with this newly acquired limp, and he bows down before Esau. We see Esau hugs him. They both cry a lot. Jacob gives him a ton of his wealth, and they both go on to settle the land that God had given them. So today we are going to look at four key principles when it comes to reconciliation. The first one is that reconciliation begins with God. Genesis 32, 1 through 2. As Jacob started on his way again, angels of God came to meet him. When Jacob saw them, he exclaimed, "This is God's camp." So he named the place Mahanaim. But isn't that how it works? When you were considering doing the right thing, when you were starting to head the right way, who was always there? You know the story of the prodigal son. When the boy finally comes to his senses and says, "I should go back to my father," he starts to head back. And what happened? The father had been watching, waiting, hoping, praying that his boy would come home. And when the boy was still a far way off, the father ran to him. When the boy started back, the father runs to meet him. And when you start to head in the right direction, when you start to get your life where it should be, when you actually start to think, maybe I should reconcile to these people that I've offended or I've hurt or I've harmed, God meets you there to help you, to carry you, to cheer you on. Matthew 5:23-24 says, if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. How many of us did this today before communion? Before offering? How many of us were reminded mid-song of a wrong that we had done to someone and we just stopped and made it right? These are the words of Jesus. If you want to be right with God, you must be right with your brother or your sister. This is what He wants before you come with your sacrifice, before you come with your gifts that are His anyway. Here's the question. Could it be the reason that your worship is meaningless, your work is ineffective, your prayers are unanswered, is that you have not reconciled with your brother or sister? Let's not forget that the world is a broken place. I know I don't have to tell you that. Just look around. Look at the news. Look at everything that is going on right now. Look at the turmoil that is raging. Natural disaster, all these things. And I'm not somebody that's like, every time a natural disaster comes, I'm like, look, see, Jesus is coming back tomorrow. It's not. We've always had disasters. We've always had tragedies. We've always had these things. But it is a reminder of the fact that this world is a really broken place and that Jesus desires for us to reconcile with Him. That God has sent Jesus so that the world might be reconciled to Him through Jesus. Now remember, these were Old Testament times. They were before Jesus. But now that He has come, Jesus, the Messiah, the sacrifice for all, He died for us so that we might be reconciled to God. 2 Corinthians 5:18, and all of this is a gift from God, who brought us back to himself through Christ. And God has given us this task of reconciling people to him. It's really hard to reconcile people to God when you've got some reconciliation to do yourself. Does that make sense? Reconciliation begins with God. And it is always a place where it starts. God is always the one that starts. Even if you think it's your own idea, God has put through the gift of the Holy Spirit, God is the one that prompts you, urges you to do the right thing, to make amends. Second thing is that reconciliation is intentional and bathed in prayer. In Genesis 32, 3 through 4, then Jacob sent messengers ahead to his brother Esau, who was living in the region of Seir in the land of Edom. He told them, "Give this message to my master Esau, humble greetings from your servant Jacob. Until now I have been living with Uncle Laban." Richard Ezel says, "Jacob knew that he had done wrong. Now he knew he had to make it right. He had to take the first step." So here's the principle. Taking the initiative is imperative in reconciliation. Restoring a cracked relationship is like mending a broken arm. If your arm is broken, you take initiative to get to a doctor so he can set it, put a cast on it, so healing can take place. Broken relationships, like broken arms, are never mended accidentally. They require purposeful and intentional action. We may try to deny the pain or ignore the split. We may think that the time heals all wounds, but it only moves the pain below the surface where it will affect your future relationships. The relationship is easier to mend when the offender apologizes to the offended. But what if the offender does not admit they're wrong? What then? The scriptures inform us that even the offended is to take the, if, sorry. The scriptures inform us that even the offended is to take the initiative in seeking reconciliation. Again, to quote Jesus, "If your brother sins against you, go and rebuke him in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother." Matthew 18:15. Look at the phrase, "just between the two of you." Too many of us are Bible-believing, but not Bible-practicing. This is one of the most overlooked and most avoided verses in the Bible. Too often, too many of us resort to our junior high days when someone has hurt us or offended us. We go to everyone else to plead our side of the story, to validate our feelings, to justify our anger, and we don't go to the person who has offended us. This must stop. Genesis 39:9-12 says, "Then Jacob prayed, 'O God of my grandfather Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, you told me, return to your own land and to your relatives, and you promised me I will treat you kindly. I am not worthy of all the unfailing love and faithfulness you have shown to me, your servant. When I left home and crossed the Jordan, I owned nothing except a walking stick. Now my household fills two large camps. O Lord, please rescue me from the hand of my brother Esau. I'm afraid that he is coming to attack me, along with my wives and children. But you promised me I will surely treat you kindly, and I will multiply your descendants until they become as numerous as the sands along the seashore, too many to count.'" Jacob prayed for the wrong reasons, but he nevertheless prayed. He prayed that Esau would spare his life. Now here's the idea. Prayer is the ointment for wounded parties. It is a lubrication for friction in relationships. The reconciliation process will often be messy. Hearts have been hardened. Feelings have been hurt. Emotions are on edge. Wounds are gaping. The offended, when approached by the offender, may look for an ulterior motive and may feel that the offender is disingenuous. The offended may be thinking, "Why after all these years do you want to get together now? Why do you want to make things right now?" God needs to soften the hearts to ease the emotions to heal the wounds, to bring understanding to the reconciling parties. No greater power is available for that to happen than through prayer. Prayer changes us. Don't pray unless you want to change. The question is, does your heart need to be softened so that healing in your broken relationships can occur? Do you need a softening of your heart? If so, prayer is the way to make that happen. Number three is that reconciliation requires humility and vulnerability. Genesis 33:3. Then Jacob went on ahead. As he approached his brother, he bowed to the ground 7 times before him. Now this act is humility. Jacob humbled himself before his brother. He came with the right spirit and the right attitude. He acknowledged that he had done wrong. He knew he was a deceiver. He tricked his brother out of his blessing. He was at fault. The idea is that humility puts us in a position for reconciliation to happen. What steps do you need to take that would communicate humility to the person that you are estranged from? Humility is a common theme throughout Scripture. It has to be practiced. Failure to do so not only allows fractured relationships to continue, but it puts us in opposition with God. Remember the James 4:6, and he gives grace generously, as the Scriptures say. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. When you don't, God opposes you. Genesis 33:4. Then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him, threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they both wept. The two brothers embraced, throwing their arms around each other. The act is a picture of vulnerability. To embrace someone is to expose your heart. To expose your heart is to reveal your part in the damaged relationship. Here you reveal the hurt and pain you caused. You admit that you were wrong. Reconciliation will never happen until the heart is exposed. Here's the rub. Whenever you expose your heart to stand a chance of having your heart broken again, people will let you down. They'll disappoint you. They'll trample on your emotions. Crawling into a shell, living in isolation, that'd be much easier. There, you can be safe from pain and hurt of relationships. You can shut out all humanity. Could it be that you have been hurt so deeply that you don't want to expose your heart again? Do you want to live that way? Do you want to go through life living in a cocoon, safe from the hurtful arrows of others, but cut off from the relationships that give you love and life and joy? I think the answer is no. If you look really deep down, I know putting yourself out there hurts. I know putting yourself out there causes disappointment. But the point is that life hurts sometimes, and life is messy sometimes, and life is disappointing sometimes. But it is so worth it. It is so worth it to be in relationships with people. They make our experience richer in life. They make your experience with Jesus fuller. Reconciliation, number four, is finished in forgiveness and restitution. Genesis 33:4. Then Esau ran to meet him, embraced him, threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they both wept. Then on in verse 8, and what were all the flocks and herds I met as I came? Esau asked. Jacob replied, they are a gift, my lord, to ensure your friendship. Forgiveness is not optional in reconciling a broken relationship. Forgiveness involves letting go so that you can get on with the rest of your life. It is not probation, but a pardon. Forgiveness means that we do not require any money, words, or actions as payment. It means that there will be no continuing resentment or bitterness. We hope for the best for the other. Forgiveness is a long healing, not a momentary one. So the idea is that restitution is attempting to restore that which has been damaged or destroyed, and seeking justice whenever we have the power to act or to influence those in authority to act. Restitution is much easier when it comes to physical property. If you have taken physical property, you give it back or you pay for it. Restitution is much more difficult when you have said words that have damaged a person's name or their character. Jacob acknowledges his wrong. He reconciles, and Esau forgives. The once broken relationship is mended. And wouldn't it be nice if all broken relationships ended that way? It can. Ephesians 4:32, instead be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Colossians 3:13, make allowances for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. And that's the point, right? We forgive. We seek forgiveness. We do this because Christ first gave it all to us. It really comes back to point one. Reconciliation starts with God. It always does. And this sermon today makes no difference to you at all if you have not been reconciled to God in the first place. And so that's what we offer today. We offer a chance for you to be reconciled to God. A chance for you to come down or talk to me afterward or find a good friend that is wise in the Lord. And say, I don't know. But God and I have kind of been enemies for a while. And I need some restoration to happen in my life. That's today. That's every day. That's any day. God loves you. He reached down to humanity, gave us His Son, so that Him and I can be reconciled through Jesus. Do you know Him? Have you been reconciled to Him? I hope so. You can listen to me preach 1,000 times, but if you don't know Jesus, then you've not gotten any better. Jesus is our answer. Jesus is the way. He is the truth. He is the life. There is no one that comes to the Father but through Him. If you want to be reconciled to the world, if you want to help reconcile the world to God, we invite you to come down and to be reconciled to God yourself. If that's not what you need today, if you need some prayer, we invite you to come. You don't have to come down front. You can find somebody to pray with afterward. I would love to pray with you. Our invitation today is just to come, find God, be reconciled through Jesus, His Son. And it's through Him that He is reconciling and drawing and beckoning the world back to Himself. And our goal, when we're on our game, is to help bring as many people as we can back to Him.